You're listening to the New Utah Podcast with your hosts, Bree.
People can say my name and I still don't pay attention.
Chris.
This is what happens when your number one health concern in the state is porn.
Jeremy.
Flicks it and then walks up and just kicks the living crap out of whoever.
And no Julia. I still, like, in my brain, I still hear "and Julia."
Waiting for it.
Yeah. Well, I didn't really change the intro. I just deleted her stuff out of it. So, I guess that is changing it, but also, like, there's still a space at the end, and it just goes, Bree, Chris, Jeremy, and that's it. I think that's the order it's in. I don't know. Episode 410 of the New Utah Podcast.
You short episodes away from 8 years.
Yeah, I can't hear you, really.
I can't hear you either. Can't hear me.
What?
You're both plugged in.
Did we get turned
Can
off?
You hear us?
No, not really. Hold on, I'm going to hot do this shit.
Maybe we need to start over.
No, we'll just do it live. Fuck it.
Fuck it, we'll do it live. Oh, there, I can hear me.
Oh, there we go.
There we go.
There I am.
All I got to do is unplug and plug back in your mics, apparently, randomly for no reason.
Cats are doing their own podcast at night, or a rave down here, a kitty rave.
Well, now we have three cats in the house, so that's a possibility.
We did it live, folks. You probably didn't even notice. There's like four pops that I'm going to have to fix and post that are, I can see them. Red is the night sky and a blood moon.
So I was just saying we're a few short weeks away from our 8-year mark. Crazy.
Yeah, eight years. We've got something special planned for 416. So
yep.
That's 6 weeks for those that can count. I'm sorry for yawning, folks. I'm fucking exhausted. It's only Tuesday. We're doing our damn kid moved back. I think we talked about that. Now we're doing renovations. I'm too fucking old to do as much manual labor as we've been doing and like not sleeping. And so we had Jeremy's son come help us.
Cause I'm currently of no help. I did drive.
You helped a lot.
Yeah.
I did drive to and from.
You held the screws.
And I used the marker.
Yeah. And there was one time when you put your hand up on a thing and held it up for us.
It was helpful to have another set of hands, certainly. We moved pretty fast. We did demolition and everything in less than 8 hours.
And I used the truck and trailer to haul materials. That was probably the most helpful thing I did.
That was very helpful, actually. And to be able to return that drywall so we didn't have two full fucking sheets of drywall just hanging
in the front
somewhere.
Room.
What are we going to do with it? So, I've been to the as with every home renovation project, I've been to the hardware store 15 times.
Yeah. You have to go. No project is complete without multiple trips.
No, cause you try to plan, but then we got too much drywall. We got enough studs, but only because we reused good studs in the walls when we reframed. It was just the whole thing was just,
I was just going to say, it went pretty well. It's just now spackling, waiting for spackle to dry, sanding,
and
spackling again, all that kind of crap.
Everything's displaced. You know, we've got a kid that's sort of in a temporary living environment that she's trying to make, at least comfortable because she lives here now, but she knows she's going to move. So only bring the clothes that you're going to wear. And then she brought that and then 5 million things for her damn cat. and so the room is full of stuff. We've had to move stuff three times already, to get in there and do stuff. And I don't blame her. She's trying to be somewhat comfortable.
Yeah.
And she had a surgery. So she's one handed. She can't do stuff with her left hand. So luckily she's right dominant, but she can't do anything with her left hand, so she's limited what she can do. I had to wash her hair on Saturday because she can't wash herself.
I don't think she fully understood what we meant when we said you're going to be living basically out of a suitcase and you're going to have
to be... She has a dresser.
I know, but you're going to have to be okay with the chaos because it's going to be chaos, and if we're dealing with it, you're going to deal with it too. Because right now in my office, I can't get to my desk because... We moved the clothes out of the studio because if it was just you, I probably would have left them, honestly. But we have a guest coming tonight, and I didn't think they would appreciate walking past half of Bree's wardrobe.
If it's just me, I don't care.
Yeah.
You don't have to walk past it either.
But like, yeah, because it was parked right there. But so we moved that into my office where the other half of Bree's wardrobe and like five of my shirts are, but also two boxes of shirts and a basket of shoes. And, Bree's got a bunch of stuff in her office as well. Like we're just packed to the gills because all these closets have been.
Well, it's not just your closet. It's the other closet.
Yeah, so it's all
but one closet in our house.
And really the closet that it isn't is Sean's closet going to be Sean's closet. And so, like all of our stuff's displaced. And then once this is what's frightening is once the closet's ready, we have carpet coming in, hopefully in the next week or so. And we will have a day where we have to disassemble all of the stuff in the bedrooms and slash office up there, move it to a different location in the house, probably mostly in the front room is my guess.
Front room, family room, yeah. I'm guessing.
Let them install carpets and then
put it back.
Put it all back. Hopefully that will be the same day.
That will be another day that we need Jonathan's help.
That is going to be nightmarish. Think about three bedrooms worth of furniture and stuff. And like,
it's a lot. That's a lot.
Well, you guys recently did that. So
I did. It was a lot.
Yeah. It's a pain in the ass.
We had to do it. So we did the main family room and then the upstairs. We had to do it in two shifts. We had no choice.
Cause you don't have places to put all the stuff.
So we did the main living room. So we took everything out, shoved it in my office, the kitchen. I mean, everywhere we could. Yeah. Did that, put it all back, and then brought everything down from the upstairs.
Down into the main levels.
Yeah.
That's just how you have to do it.
I had to do it.
Yeah. But the carpet's old up there. It was new when you guys moved in, right?
Yeah.
So it's funny because Jonathan was telling your daughter that we're going to take the carpet, and she's like, but it's got cat pee on it.
Dog pee.
The cats don't pee on the carpet.
Jonathan's like, it's going in our garage. It's going to have all of my lawnmower equipment pee on it. Yeah. Doesn't matter.
So hopefully that will be, I'm hoping it will be fast and it'll be over with. But of course I'm also in the middle of transitioning from one job to another job
and school
and working a lot of hours because it's the first of the month, which is the busiest time at one of the jobs.
So I did neglect to tell everyone because we were busy with all of the remodeling over the weekend. We did get the first four of our chicks.
Ooh.
The big ones?
No, the big ones come this Friday. So we were there last, I want to say it was Thursday, maybe Friday, to get this stuff for the chicks that are coming this weekend. But they had the older, I say older, like 3 or 4 weeks old.
Oh, okay.
Nobody wants them. So you can get them for a lot cheaper.
Really?
Yeah.
Why?
I don't know.
That's 3 or 4 weeks you don't have to feed them and care for
them. Right.
And the likelihood of them dying is a lot lower at that point.
They're going to die if they're just going to drop dead for no reason, which they do.
That's going to be in the first couple weeks.
First 2-3 weeks.
Yeah. So. I remember last year, like you lost 20% of your chickens in the first week or two.
Yeah. And then just walk out and they're dead.
They're just frail creatures when they're babies.
So I couldn't pass it by. Jonathan and I were there getting the stuff and he's the one that pointed out, it's like, look, they're on sale because they're the older ones. And they're the ones that I normally get, just your good old-fashioned, the Rhode Island Reds and the black sex links, which is what the bulk of our chickens are because they lay an average of 5 eggs a week.
Boy, isn't that a difference from last year?
Good Lord.
Raffle. I mean, I was pretty spot on when I was like, dude, people have been through COVID, the egg prices go up. Everyone's going to want to raise chickens.
Yeah.
And like you pointed out, like when we calculated it up, like it's just absurd. Like the investment that people make for like 4 chickens.
Yeah. It's crazy. Yeah. They buy $1,000 pre-made chicken coop that honestly is garbage.
It's a piece of shit.
Too small.
You build your own for like a couple $100. That's way better.
Well, my massive chicken coop, when we tallied it up, I think I spent about $600 in materials for my houses.
Yeah, and not including the barn part, which is an optional housing unit for them.
Which houses 30 chickens.
Yeah.
Anyway, so I couldn't pass it up because they were on sale. So I bought, so it was Brooke. It was, Hannah's friend that works there, and I'm like, give me 4 of the biggest chickens you got. And she's like, oh, I'm happy to hear that, because everybody's just like, I want the smallest one you can grab.
Like, why the fuck would you want that? Why are you buying? I guess if you're buying the chickens for Easter presents because you're a fucking psychopath.
Maybe.
People do ducks and chickens for Easter, ducks, and I don't understand it.
You've got it. Ducks are horrible to raise.
Their shit's so big.
And it stinks, and it stains everything.
Yeah, it's like... Oh, that reminds me. Okay, since we're talking about birds, so Easter, we have people over on Sunday for Easter. That was, I mean, it was fine, but holy shit, like
with all the stuff that we're doing,
yeah, like, on the back of everything else, and like the whole house is filled with fucking drywall dust that we had to clean, and anyway, so Bree calls me to come upstairs and look because Sean notice it first, the hawk.
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
Nice.
So. We had a hawk in our backyard eating one of our doves.
Nice.
It had killed one of the doves.
Just tearing it apart, feathers falling.
Oh, yeah. It was in the yard. It was picking them up. Like, it was on the ground in the yard, and it was just chucking the feathers. I mean, it ate most of the bird. I had to go out and clean up the entrails and
that
carcass
awesome.
So Phoebe wouldn't play with it. But
not the carcass.
I said carcass.
It sounded like you said the carcass.
No, that's how Republicans bastard. Do things here. No, but I got a lot of cool pictures. I'll show you them.
That's awesome.
But, yeah, nice, good-looking hawk. Any other bird, I would have been fine. I'm really kind of sad because I'm pretty sure it's one of our two doves.
Oh.
We have doves that – and doves don't live as long as we've been here, but for as long as we've been here, we've had pairs of doves nesting in our pine tree out front. And they're always around the house. Like, they're on the fence, in the back, they're – and the hawk ate one of them, I'm pretty sure.
So that might be the end.
Well, it was definitely a light-colored bird, and I can't think of another bird.
No, it was
like
100%
that.
A dove. Like, I looked at it with binoculars from upstairs. It was definitely a dove.
So that might be
sadly.
The end of the doves in your area.
Well, at least for this year. They only live, like, 3 or 4 years, so we've had to have multiple pairs. Like,
yeah.
There's no way they've lived, you know, 10
That's pretty cool,
years.
Though, watching a hawk do its thing. We had that hawk that... It tore up at that bird last year in our backyard, and so there's just feathers falling, and because it was up in the tree.
Yeah,
I was just on the ground, and you'd see it, just, and feathers would just fly.
Yeah, and he ate a bunch, and then the hawk just chilled for a while. And then
Chris even went outside at one point during because he was smoking the ham for Easter, and he just looked at Chris, and as long as Chris wasn't headed over, he just stayed there.
Yeah, and then he would, like, you could tell it was, like, full and needed a break, so he just kind of stood there on top of it for a while.
The hawk's like, what are you going to do, fat boy? Come on, fight me.
And then eventually, like, he ate some more of it, and then he jumped into the tree right above it and then, like, took off. And I was like, okay, well, he's clearly done with this thing. I'm going to go get it so Phoebe doesn't.
That's awesome.
Yeah, kind of cool. Disappointed it was a dove. Why couldn't it have been the fucking birds that make nests in my damn aunt? So we have conduit in the back porch now where the electrical runs up
yep.
for the fans and stuff. And they have decided to nest in the
that.
Crook. And so last year they built a nest and they had definitely had babies in there. Like, God damn it. Because then there's like bird shit on the porch right there, like right off the edge of the nest. There's a ton of bird shit. And so I was like, okay, well, I'll just make sure, you know, get rid of the nest. And like, I go out there in like February, late February, early March, and like the nest is pretty much gone. And I'm watching birds like take pieces of it and fly off. So I'm like, oh, cool. Other birds are using their shit. And it was like completely gone. And then I went out there this weekend and there's a fucking nest there again. And I'm like, I don't want to like destroy the nest because there's probably fucking eggs in it at
right.
this point. And like, I don't want to be responsible for the death of birds. I mean, I don't care about birds that much, but also like,
still, yeah,
it's kind of fucked up. It's not really harming anything. It just creates a pile of bird poop that I have to clean up regularly.
That's funny.
Chopper was real interested in that bird poop, but, I think that's cause he's an idiot.
My dogs love bird poop. They love chicken poop. I'm guessing it tastes like chicken. I don't know.
It just,
I don't know.
Chicken poop taste. I'm guessing it tastes like chicken.
I mean, if we didn't have a guess, Jeremy might have two in a row.
Fuck.
Yeah, they go out there and eat it all the time. They love it.
I guess it tastes like chicken. Do you want to talk about, I guess you put the family reunion
yeah,
on
just,
a barrel
so,
trip.
Just excited. So I know we talk about it on the show every year. The group of friends does a Bear Lake trip. Some years we've even done some of our podcast stuff based off the trip. Last year we tried all the different raspberry flavors, wasn't it, to find out which was the best?
No. Maybe you did.
Yeah, we talked about it when we came back.
Yeah,
it was the Little Shack. It wasn't any of the LeBeau's, LeBeau's 2, LeBeau's 3, LeBeau's next door. It was the Little Shack.
Yeah, none of the places, like, definitely in Garden City are the best. It's the Custard Shack, the
Little
like
shack.
Caribbean
yeah, so.
Custard Shack that's got the best shakes.
And then a couple of years ago, we did the Cave So anyway, I'm just excited because we're in the planning stage for that, and
we should plan the ropes course this year.
It's only 4 months away.
Yeah.
Well, are you shitting me?
No,
I got a lot of shit between now and then.
I mean, I don't want to, like, you know, speed through our summer or anything, but that's why I've kind of started pushing it. It's just like, it's all.
I mean, yeah. When we did it, like, yeah, like it, that makes sense, but yeah, it wasn't our responsibility this year.
Right.
So
if it's not, I mean, if we don't reserve something here in the next month or so,
that's the thing.
It's really scarce. So.
Is it's gone. I mean, the week before, which is the raspberry days, everything's gone, but it's also twice as expensive. So we're in the right time frame. But yeah, it's only 4 months away, which is crazy.
It's close. And we're going to have a smaller group this year, probably.
I haven't had a chance to look at the links, but I did see the comments where Chris was like, I think we've been to that one. And then somebody else was like, I think we have. And Chris was like, we have.
Yeah.
Benita.
Which one was it?
Well,
it's the one from 2 years ago.
2 years ago. The thing is,
the one that Benita and Sean had.
Yeah. Oh.
The thing is, when you got a group our size, there's not, I mean, there is stuff to choose from, but When you need like 7-8 bedrooms and you're.
Yeah, a lot of it depends on how many people are going and how many kids are coming.
So. Anyway, just excited for that. I threw that in there because I'm just.
Yeah, I think it's a smaller group this year, right?
It is, yeah.
Hopefully. I mean, Sean did bring like 20 people in his family last year.
And then invited.
And I don't think they're coming this year. I don't.
No, he's pretty much said that he thinks that he'll go up separately if he does that.
Yeah, I think they really enjoyed it and they might do that as a family. As far as the friend group goes,
the Framley.
Yep, the Framleys.
Yeah, John and Jody won't be coming. Josh and Chris won't be able to
come.
Well,
John and Jody said they might come over a weekend, but they'd stay at like a yurt or something.
Yeah.
Yeah, they just.
I actually have thought about that. The glamping thing that they have there does look cool.
Well, they have those yurts, and then they have those covered wagon things.
Yeah, the covered wagon things are the glamping. It's like a really fancy, like, not camping.
Right. Those do look kind of cool.
Yeah, the whole experience is like, it's glamping, and it looks like a fun experience, so. They're basically just fucking hotel rooms with, like, they bring you custom s'mores kits.
I feel like they're
shit.
Motel rooms.
Well, yeah, because the outside, but they're as expensive as a fucking swanky hotel. They're not cheap, but it'd be a cool experience. I don't remember the name of the company, but they do a few different places.
Maybe like a one night thing.
I mean, it'd be fun for a weekend. I think it'd be fine.
Oh, we do need to talk about the house.
Yeah, so I saw yesterday, I'm glad you put it on here like I was saying earlier. So I read the article yesterday. So on Easter Sunday, you know, a Sunday, first off.
Which isn't suspicious.
And then Easter Sunday, which is a fucking holiday, which is like ultra suspicious from a construction standpoint.
Yeah, no one. Yeah.
So there's a historic building. It's the Fifth Ward Meeting House. It's over on 740 South, 300 West.
The building is like 1809. Yeah.
Or... 1909.
Yeah.
1909. It's over 100 years old.
Over 100 years old. It's on
the Historic National Landmarks Registry.
And the state one, too. So it's on two different registries for being historical. And the buildings that I have helped people with that are historical, it's hard to even get an okay to change the paint color.
We've talked about it on the show, and we had the Historical Society people, Rachel and whatever. I don't remember what the name of the group is, but, you know, their whole purpose in life is to help preserve historical buildings.
Preservation
Utah. There you go. And like we've talked about it a bunch of times on the show too, like historical buildings, once you get that designation, it becomes very, like you said,
right,
almost impossible to make most changes. Like, basically, they'll allow you to get stuff up to code, meaning, like, you know, putting in, you know, proper staircases and proper
bringing
electrical
windows up to code and
plumbing and stuff like that.
But even windows, they have
But it has
rules.
To be a very specific window. Typically, it's the Pella style. Doesn't have to be Pella, but Pella style. Wood clad.
Yeah, you have to get the specific windows to match the facade and the building's time frame and era.
And the paint color has to be within the era anyway.
And occasionally, like, especially, like, you'll see downtown, we have some historic buildings that the facade still exists in some of the bigger buildings downtown where the entire exterior has to be kept up and kept the way it is, but they can modernize the interior, basically.
Yeah, and they've got some buildings we've talked about where they basically build a steel shell
around it.
Inside of it.
Well, it's kind of what's happening to the temple right now.
Yeah.
Yeah, in a sense. And so, but this, like, so anyway,
yeah,
so this, so this building, so Sunday afternoon, they just start fucking demolishing this building. Like, whoever owns the site is my guess.
So I looked it up. I dug a little bit farther and it's called like Third West Holdings is the name. So what a lot of these builders do is they create a company just for that particular job. So that's why it's called Third West Holdings Consulting.
Yeah, it's usually because they get investors, and so they have like Jeremy invest and somebody else invest, and they create an LLC or something.
And the other reason they do that is because they can disassociate it from their main company, so that when they do shady fucking shit, like demolish a building that's a national landmark without permits.
Right.
The fines and lawsuits can go to that company.
So looking up this 300 West Holdings company, they purchased this building in December.
So they've had it for 3 months.
There have been no permits.
Yeah.
There's been no, like, anything, because it just so happened that one of the people on the committee saw what was happening. Yeah. And called it in, and then because it was a Sunday and an Easter Sunday, they were able to pull some strings, and they got out there and did a cease and desist
yeah.
order on it. And the construction workers all just disappeared because they're like, we have permits. And the officers who were shutting them down was like, show me the permits. And they didn't have it. However, 99% of the time, the guy out there running the
does not have a permit.
Bulldozer has nothing to do with it. And so they interviewed the guy that owns this holding company, and he said he knows nothing about it.
Yeah, this is some bullshit. But they fucking 100% knew what they were doing.
But it is awfully suspicious. Why would a construction company just show up and start tearing down a building on a Sunday, on an Easter Sunday?
Well, and also, if you buy a building in 3 months and don't have any permits yet, my guess is they knew exactly what they were fucking doing, because if you want to get permits for the historical buildings, they take fucking forever. You have to jump through a million hoops, and you have to spell out exactly what you want to do.
It's expensive. It's time. You're looking at a good year.
And so instead, what they did clearly is, you guys go demolish this building. Okay. We'll do it. We assume you have all the right shit.
Yeah.
You know, it's not hard to bulldoze some stuff.
I mean, I don't even know if they necessarily assume that, because why would they start on Easter Sunday?
Yeah, it's extra money. They got paid extra to be there.
Yeah.
I think that they're just hoping that because it's Easter Sunday, nobody notices, they get it demolished, and the people that did it disappeared, and they're like, we have no idea who came and demolished our building.
And that's exactly what they're trying to do now. And basically what they're trying to do is have plausible deniability so they can't get slapped with the massive fines that are coming. Cause I assure you, they will get huge fines.
Right. Well, so I don't know if you looked at I went on Google Earth and looked at what it looks like before. They took out the whole
front entry,
vestibule, foyer. Yeah. I mean, they took it up to the gym, basically.
Part of basically what makes it look like the old historic building. It's completely destroyed now.
About
in that
a
sense.
Third of it, I'm guessing.
So now that they've put a cease and desist order in place, and now they'll be doing an investigation. The thing is, like, if they would have demolished the whole thing, they would have gotten a fine, because there's nothing you can do to bring it back.
Right.
So they would have gotten a fine, and there's still nothing you can do to bring the other part back, but they would have just gotten a fine and, like, you know.
I love that you keep saying they would have gotten a fine.
And they would have been able to build whatever the hell they wanted at that point.
I have no doubt that's what they were hoping for.
Yeah. But now that they have the cease and desist order in place, they're going to be saddled with this property for fucking ever. They're going to get fined massively. They will probably get sued. My guess is probably by the local historical society and the national society.
It depends on what registry they're on. There's a billion different registries.
They're on the National Registry of Historic Places and the local historic landmark registry.
Well, and the other thing is even if, let's say whoever owned it just disappears. Well, it's flagged now in the city.
Yeah.
Like that property has now been red flagged. Like no one can buy it. No one can sell it. No, it's like locked.
Yeah, it's locked in. And the best they can hope for is that the city will let them put that piece back, like rebuild that facade and do something with the interior. But, and it's going to be tied up forever. So they've lost their investment basically, from what I can tell, what I would gather. So,
well, and the article I was reading says they valued it at $10 million because the square footage was not that great, and it needed some help. It was in sad shape, but because of the registry that was there, they were estimating it at about $10 million.
Yeah. Yeah. So, I'm sure the property's worth that, like the land, but now.
So this is going to, it'll be interesting. Well,
who did you say owns it?
It's called like Third West Holdings.
Like 3RD or no, THIRD?
300
West Holdings.
Holding something like that.
You're looking to see if you insure them?
Somebody you insure.
No.
That's just crazy to me that, I mean, they know, 100% they knew what the fuck they were doing.
300 West Holding Corp?
There you go.
It's expired.
Of course it is.
Of course. Yeah, this that's some shady, yeah. shady shit.
Everything about that's shady.
But, you know, luckily some people saw it and were able to, like, get it stopped before it was completely done. Because I think that's a bigger, like, that's a bigger punishment than the fine ever would have been for the full destruction of the property.
Yeah, I have no doubt that's what they were hoping. Let's do it on a weekend, a holiday weekend. No one's around. Just knock the sucker down in, like, 3 or 4 hours.
Easier to ask for forgiveness and permission because they would have never got permission.
Right. Anyway, yeah, there's some local...
Yeah, that's some crazy. I saw that story and I immediately thought of you, and I was also like, that's just some crazy shit. Like, there's no doubt in my mind what those bastards were doing. So.
Oh, yeah.
It's an LLC, so I don't think it's a Utah LLC.
It might not be a Utah.
It
could be some company from some, who knows where. And there's just somebody local kind of running it, but the
it's probably Delaware. There's a lot of Delaware.
Delaware's got really friendly corporate law. That's why it's funny because, like, if you go to Delaware, there's just a bunch of, like, plain nothingness buildings that all have, like, suites with one room, that are like, oh, this bank has an office in Delaware, and it's literally like one room in a building. Yeah, basically. It'd be like, it's like the shared office spaces, but, like, they're permanent, and you literally have, like, one office in this building, so you incorporate in Delaware.
So you technically.
Oh, and they're like, every bank and financial institution, all the credit card companies, are all headquartered there because they have the friendliest fucking corporate laws of any state in the country. It's so crazy. And there's nothing else there. Like, that's all Delaware is. None of the executives actually sit in Delaware for any of these companies either.
Well, you don't think of Delaware as like a vacation spot.
I think of it as Wayne's World.
Yeah,
they're
exactly.
Like going through, like, ooh, I'm in Hawaii. I'm Mukulaka Hiki. Come on, you want to lay me?
I'm in Delaware.
We're in... Delaware.
Yep, that's exactly what I think of too.
Every time.
Well, I don't think it's a Delaware corporation, but
yeah, that's crazy stuff. Okay, joining us this week is Tim Heiner from Tactical Timmies,
yep.
Right? And you know, I got to say, so Tim is a brother of a previous guest. We'll talk about it in a second, but when I was looking up Tactical Timmies, I didn't realize Tactical Timmy was like a term, like a thing.
That's why as soon as I saw that, because my dad was in the military, we'll get to that in a little bit. So I knew exactly what a Tactical Timmy is. And I'm like, what the hell? Who is on the show? Because of the Tactical
Timmy. So explain what a Tactical Timmy is, because clearly that's where your name for the business comes from.
It doesn't actually. My wife thought it was the coolest name, and my wife was the one that came up with it. And it wasn't until later that I learned, because
learned it was a thing after.
It was. We actually used a different term. We were like, oh, they're high speed or whatever.
Tactical Timmy and then a Boogaloo. I can't think of the other one. So the Tactical Timmy is somebody who
is
hardcore trained. Yeah. Like they are
super prepared.
100%
So those dudes that you see in the videos that are doing the speed courses, with the guns and those are tactical.
So that's tactical Timmy. So I can't think what it is.
So the electric Boogaloo is where it comes from.
There's someone who duct tapes a flashlight to the end of their gun to night hunt and other end.
It's like prepping is what it is now, right?
Oh, there's nothing wrong with a good prepper. I'm going to kill my neighbors if things go to shit and take all their stuff.
Because
I promise they have food. Food stores. And I ain't got that here. I've got some stuff, but they got the whole shebang.
They got all of it. Yeah.
Anyway, he's got a fucking machine shop in his garage. Like they got
sometimes
two
they
campers. They got a boat. I'm just gonna go kill them because they're gonna open up their door. I'll just shoot them and take all their shit. I don't know.
I don't think Steve would open the door if something bad was happening.
He'd
think
open it for me. They put their garbage on my lawn for years.
No,
he probably would. Who knows?
But without a doubt, they don't have a bunker underground. I don't know.
You don't know that.
But they are
I've
hoarders,
been in their house. They are kind of hoarders.
They got a lot of shit, so
they do burn their garbage.
If they get bombed, they'll be protected.
Yeah, they do burn garbage.
Smells so bad in the wintertime when they're burning their garbage.
So
now that we're off topic,
that's fine.
So we'll get back to a little bit about you. So
yeah.
The first question we have for you, Tim, is when were you born? Just your month and date.
Your month and date.
Sorry,
no,
I get
you don't have to provide your
month and date.
You do not have to provide.
I was born in August of 1979. I don't mind.
What's your date?
So you were
August day.
Thanksgiving
what?
Baby.
Thanksgiving. In August?
That's when you were. That's no, when yeah. you
Thanksgiving
were,
time.
What part
parents,
of August? Like middle
oh,
August.
Yeah,
or
that's when
that's
you were
probably
conceived.
What it was. Yeah.
Your parents had a really good Thanksgiving.
It was. Well, I come from a yours, mine, and ours family.
Uh huh.
So, my mom was divorced. My dad, his first wife died, right? So, I was born right after they, it was right after they got married. They got married in October.
So there you go.
Oh.
So it was.
I bet you were. Yeah. I bet you weren't necessarily a Thanksgiving baby. You were probably in their honeymoon phase.
How old was? I was gonna say they got married in October. My parents got married. I was born in July. My parents got married in May. So, yeah. Pretty sure something happened before then. I didn't know that till I was much older. But
like a couple years ago.
I'm like, I just thought they were. I just always assumed that they were married. I don't know why I assumed that. They were both like wild party kids and very young. So,
yeah.
So you were born here in Utah?
Nope.
No,
my family's, I think like my brother said, my family's from Idaho, really.
Mm-hmm. What part of Idaho?
Southern Idaho, right around, Twin Falls.
So, mm-hmm. So most of my family's from Pocatello. I was born in Pocatello.
Oh, I gotcha.
I did not grow up in Idaho, but most of my family is from Pocatello. I do have some Twin Falls, some Idaho Falls, some Blackfoot, some Chubbuck.
Yeah, so it's the
that
same
area.
With us. It's the same with us. Like, most of my family moved around. So a lot of my dad's brothers actually live around Chubbuck and Pocatello.
That's so like kind of crazy.
Yeah, when Julia was here, when his brother was here, we chastised her for failing to represent the
Idaho connection.
Didn't represent
my daughter.
Too bad.
I think that's the true. That's the case. So I don't know. We were talking about this. But that's the case with a lot of, especially the Intermountain region, when you're not in the major city. So by the major city, like, I guess Boise, maybe.
Yeah, Boise is the biggest one.
That's the big one in Idaho, and it's not even that big.
Nope.
Or like Salt Lake City or Denver. Like if you're born in those areas, sometimes like your whole family is right in that metropolitan area. But otherwise, like in Wyoming, like, yeah, I was born in Green River, and you have like family in like five different towns within a 300-mile radius because they're all such small towns. And it's like, I got to get out of here. I went 15 miles away to this other shitty little town.
Well, it was a little bit bigger.
Like, that's totally how it works.
Wow. Got to get out of Chubbuck, moving to Pocatello. It's bigger.
Yeah.
So, your brother is Spencer. So we had Spencer on, not that long ago, episode 399.
Yeah.
He's the Silverback Custom Woodwork guy. So he does, got his hat up there and a board he gave us.
Some wood burning carving stuff he did.
And we're going to be ordering.
Too bad he didn't leave that knife. That would have been awesome.
Yeah. Well, he was a little attached to that knife.
Oh, was it?
The one that he made. It was cool.
He makes knives all the time.
He brought one in that he had
It was one that he just had done something different with. I can't remember what it was now.
Yeah. It was cool.
Anyway, it was really cool.
So anyway, so he said, "Oh, you guys got to talk to my brother."
Did you grow up
in Idaho?
No. So when I was about two, my parents, my dad, to get to the city, you know, it's a lot bigger. So he moved to Ogden is where I grew up.
Gotcha. Yeah. So I was three when we moved out of Idaho. So I hear you.
Grew up in O-Town. And then you go to high school there and everything.
Yep.
And then after high school, do you go straight into the military?
No, I did not. I went on a mission, you know, from Utah. Yeah, so, I went to Mexico.
What part of Mexico? Mexico is a big place.
I went to Yucatan.
Okay.
Yeah. I went to the peninsula.
Yeah.
Oh, that's awesome. I bet you had some good food.
It is.
That's
it
a nice part of Mexico.
It's not a nice part of Mexico.
It's not like if you would have said I went to Baja.
Tijuana.
Yeah. Those aren't all those great places. Parts of Mexico.
Oh, his phone went to Tijuana.
Or like Monterey.
So Monterey. So I went to Monterey for some college stuff.
Yeah. People think of Mexico and like the border Mexico is like desert. Yeah. Not great living conditions. Like most of the Mexican population live in like just like this smashed piece kind of in the center.
So really most people in Mexico live in the city.
Yeah, in Mexico City.
It's el Distrito Federal.
Yeah.
Oh, that was terrible. Sorry.
But it's been a while.
It has been. It's been 25 years, so it's been a little while.
Monterey is huge. Monterey
is really big. That's one of the big cities in the north.
And it's more like Chicago. Yeah. It's industrial. It's not touristy.
Yeah,
people don't go there for vacation.
No. But there's like, there is like a band of Mexico that's extremely fertile land. It's where the Mayans and the Aztecs were, that. And that's where most of the population lives. But a lot of people are like, oh, I've been to Cabo. Cabo's not where most of Mexico lives.
It was funny when we went down to Yucatan and we went, cause that's where we went and saw the, the Aztec ruins, but
it's all Mayan.
Or Mayan. Mayan. That's right. Oh yeah.
There's no Aztec ruins.
Yeah, no Aztecs. The Aztecs were the bastards that nobody liked.
they were just in central Mexico. More,
So, but it was a 2.5 hour bus ride from the beach. And so you're going through real towns and it was funny to watch my kids like, this is a dump. But I'm like, this is real.
Yeah. There's grass huts. So
When we were driving through for a similar reason, there were lots of people saying, why are there bars on the windows and all this stuff? And I was like, because
it's not a great place for people.
Our guide was actually pretty awesome.
I think those, like the parts of Mexico, like the Yucatan Peninsula and stuff, there's some really beautiful places there.
Oh yeah. It's like you go to places like Playa. And
I mean, Cancun. those are giant resort towns.
They are, and I lived on one of the islands for a while. Lived on, they say Cozumel in English, which I always say Cozumel because that's how we said it.
I really liked Cozumel.
We just went there.
We went and checked out some ruins there. Some like in the center of the island.
Yeah, there's little tiny ruins.
Yeah, well, it's big. It's like they've uncovered tons of stuff over the last like 10, 20 years there.
It was the ones where I guess somebody was blowing them up to find the gold. Before they stopped,
there was some general that had like bought all this land and was like, "Oh, I'm gonna find gold," and he started just like blowing shit up.
So they've been putting it back together, and I guess some little kid on a Disney cruise was like kicking at what he thought was a stone, and he uncovered bones, and so they stopped doing that and went. And anyway, it was really cool.
It is cool.
That's on Cozumel they have the road that runs clean across the island that was all this ancient cobblestone road. And they suspect that because that particular set of ruins has no altar, none of the ball courts for the sacrifices, that it was only used for weddings.
Yeah.
Huh.
They believe that
how beautiful
they believe
is.
If they once they
have
recover a lot of
the
pieces,
and, I don't know.
They'll have.
That's cool.
Yeah.
There's a lot of cool stuff.
Yeah.
So at Chichen Itza.
Yeah.
There's a cool sound that they do. It makes they call it bird chirping.
Yeah. And Chichen Itza is on the mainland, right?
It's on the peninsula.
Yeah.
Yep. It's kind of in the center of the peninsula.
Yeah. Okay.
We went to starts with a K. I don't know. Something like that. Yeah. It's not one of the. I mean, it was sizable, but it's not one of the big ones.
But you can climb up the temple, which is really cool.
The one we went to wasn't in Mexico, though.
The pyramid.
Well, we went to two, because we went to the one in Cozumel, and then we went to Zunantunich, which is in Belize, right on the border of Guatemala and Belize.
That was the one we got to climb.
So, anyway, so you spend some time in Mexico, then you come back.
Came back.
Have you been back to Mexico?
I have, yeah.
Yeah, to that same area?
Yep. Okay. I went to Cozumel just recently with my family. It was last year.
So when they put you there, cause like some missions, like if you go to like Rio de Janeiro, like you're not leaving Rio, like that's just a big ass city. But like when you're in, like in the Yucatan, are you really traveling all over that state?
Yes. So there's three states. So it's the state of Yucatan, Chichen Itza, I said the wrong thing. I apologize.
No.
So it's Quintana Roo and then, Chetumal.
Are you traveling between all three of those states?
I apologize. No, I keep saying the wrong thing.
We wouldn't know.
I'm saying certain cities. So it's,
Baby Rose, stay out of the way.
Campeche, Yucatan, Quintana Roo.
And do you travel between all three of those states?
Through all three states.
Wow.
That's cool.
So they just split it and now it just covers like part of Yucatan and, Quintana Roo. And then the other one is, Campeche.
So you just spend like a chunk of time here, a chunk of time here, a chunk of time here.
Yep.
So that's the one we looked, however you say that.
Conjulich.
Yeah. So that's the one we saw. It's 2.5 hours off the beaten path. So the nice thing about that is it wasn't like some of them where there's thousands of people. There was like 20.
Yeah. No, that's way better.
Yeah.
So I've been to ruins where it's like that. So there's a huge one. It's called,
thinking.
It's horrible. It's terrible. But it has the pyramid is a little different. It's not a typical step pyramid. It's rounded.
Oh,
and so that's what's kind of cool about that one.
The cool thing about this one, and I don't know, maybe it's the same for the others, is they said that as they didn't call them dynasties, but basically as it
They are, yeah.
Goes from one dynasty to the next. Mm-hmm. They would build a temple over the top of the existing temple. Yeah. And so this particular one had three
layers, right?
Three layers. That, so like the reigning kings or whatever would go to these other areas and build their dynasty over the top of the last one. So it just kept getting bigger.
Bigger and bigger.
But like if you went through them, like, it was really cool because there was one part that they had open so you could actually see the different and like the innermost was, they're guessing, like 6,000-7,000 years old.
Yeah.
Was just crazy.
Was there a big push when you were there for the more native population? So one of the things that I picked up on a lot when we were there, and we were there, what, a year and a half ago, I think. One thing that I picked up on is the natives there were very big on trying to bring back, the Mayan culture because there was like this feeling that with, you know, the move of the Spanish Inquisition and Europeans into the land that they stamped out a lot of that culture over time and that they're trying to bring back the more traditional Mayan
like
stuff
identifying
into,
as Mayan rather
instead
than Mexican.
Of Mexican.
So, They have done that. So a lot of people, when I was there, still spoke Mayan, like natively.
Okay. So
They spoke more Mayan than they spoke Spanish.
And I was curious how recent that push was. So
probably not.
I would
not
say
that recent. Yeah,
I would say it actually was recent, but they still spoke Mayan, right? And so, because they still identified as Mexican, certain ways to say Mayan. Mm-hmm. In Spanish is considered an insult, which is, it's weird. Mm-hmm. It's like,
it's like slang for, you know, Native Americans as well. Yeah. Like I'm sure there's ways to say it that aren't nice.
I don't know. Most people were really proud of their Mayan heritage because it's different.
Right.
Most other people are Aztec.
Right.
And so Mayan is one of the few places where it's different. It's its own insular group, right?
Yeah.
And I don't know that the Aztecs or the Mayans were nicer, one or the other.
No, I would say.
So our tour guide
to say which.
Yeah. Our tour guide was Mayan, and he said, and this is what he said. He said the Aztecs were the Lycahuata, the Hitler Nazis. They came in and they like took over. So that's what he compared them to.
Well, I'm sure that's, you know,
that's
a warring tribe.
Yeah, two warring nations. That's like, you know, back in Europe when you're talking about warring tribes in Europe.
Mayas and Aztecs, not friends.
No, not at all.
No, they were not.
No, they were in close proximity and fought a lot.
It was kind of like an overlap.
Yeah.
So the Mayans existed to a certain period of time as like a dynastic, you know, culture. Mm-hmm. And then the Aztecs kind of came later. And so a lot of the culture that existed in the, you know, with the Mayans, with most Mesoamerican stuff, it was kind of incorporated, or the Aztecs incorporated it later.
See, there you go. This guy's learned.
This is awesome.
A little bit.
So way off topic, but still fun.
I'm just really interested.
No, that's fine.
You know, especially, you know,
especially since we're going to Ensenada for the 50,000th time.
That's an interesting place to serve a mission in a sense. I mean, it's close, but it's not close. Like, you know, and like understanding like how big of an area that you covered, like that's pretty weird unless you're in like Africa or something, right?
I was surprised how big of a culture shock it was for me because it was like my first area was in the center of the peninsula. So I didn't see any water and it was a tiny town.
And it's like a rainforest right there, right?
It is. So it's low lying jungle.
Yeah.
What it is, it's basically a coral bed that was, it grew up over top of the ocean, right?
So there's very little soil is what.
Yeah. So most of it is, it's all limestone.
Yeah.
Because it was coral bed originally. There's lots of caves. There's almost no above ground rivers.
Yeah.
Everything is below. So there's tons of cave systems in the peninsula.
Awesome.
Yeah.
That's so cool. So you come back from your religion sponsored vacation. So how do you, cause I want to talk about your service a bit because I know you spent a lot of time in the military.
I don't know if I spent a lot of time. I spent like a typical, enlistment period. And then I was basically medically retired is what kind of happened. I was medically retired.
Did you do a 4-year, 6-year?
I did 5 years active duty. And then I did 3 years reserve, and that's kind of when I got
No, 8 years.
I was told I had to do.
Eight years is a good solid time. It's not the 20 for retirement.
I'm just happy we're finally having somebody from the Army on.
That's true.
Because my grandpa was Army, and we have a lot of Air Force, and we have.
So my dad was Army. He was 101st Airborne.
Oh, really? There you go.
Beret. So it's, he started in Vietnam.
Yeah.
And then he ended his career in the first Gulf War, 1989 to 19.
Was he still in the 101st?
I don't know.
I remember in junior high when everybody was over for the war, we did those billboards. Your dad was, remember in the hallway?
Yeah.
Your dad was one of the people that we had named up.
So I know in his younger days, he was 101st.
Yeah.
Special forces, but then towards.
Then he transitioned to special forces.
Yeah.
Okay.
And then.
So was he special ops here in Utah? Because there's actually a special operations unit in the National Guard here in Utah.
That's what he was.
And so I know because I was airborne as well.
So he was up at the 1457th is what he was.
I got
in.
You.
So you go to your mission, and then what after the mission?
So I was like, oh, go to college, I guess.
Okay.
I was trying to be a dentist for a while, but
I have ADHD. There are more dentists in Utah.
I know. It's crazy.
That's like the number one
profession. There's a lot of kids here, man.
There are.
It's true.
There's a lot of kids.
So what school did you go to when you did go to school?
I went to Weber State. It was just, you know, it was just there.
It's school that's there.
Yeah, you live there. It makes sense.
It's a good school. One of my daughters almost went there.
Yeah. For certain things, it is actually really good. So anyway, that's what I did. I have ADHD, so it was like a struggle to keep going to school.
Oh, yeah, I bet.
So I get bored really easy. So I ended up... doing a lot of computer stuff. So I started just building my own computers. And Spencer, who did communications in the Army Reserve, he decided that he was going to do IT. He convinced me to go move to Texas and start working in data storage. So I did that for a number of years. And I was actually in Texas where I joined the military.
Ah.
So what drove that decision? That's a for most people, like military is like an early life thing. And you know, you go on a mission and then you try college, you start working, you move somewhere to work and you're doing, you know, IT type work.
So I want to know, how old were you in basic?
I was 29.
Which you were old as
you were the old man.
I was, and you know what? I wasn't even the oldest one there. Yeah. A lot of guys like me, I guess we felt we should join the military, you know.
So was that
9/11 or whatever?
Was that the decision then? Was that what?
That's basically what it was. I talked to my wife. I just got married. I met my wife in Texas. This is crazy, right?
So you got married and you're like,
I feel like you're doing all the things a young military guy would do, but just older.
I know.
And kind of in reverse, right? Like usually they I don't know that they get married and then
I don't know. I hear that story actually.
It does happen. It's usually that they join the military and then they're dating a girl and they're like, oh, we should get married.
Let me make sure
I'll never see you again.
Exactly.
And then they get in, they get divorced a year later.
Yeah, because living with someone in the military is
not horrible.
Easy.
Yeah, it's not easy. Just ask my wife.
She's still your wife?
She is. We were separated for a while because, you know, it's hard.
It's a rough life.
I'm not an easy person, so, you know.
So 29 and basic.
So, basic. I want to know what your wife's reaction was to, like, babe, I know we just got married, but I need to join the military.
My brother-in-law, her younger brother, she kind of comes from a legacy military family. Okay. So that's why.
So not a shocker.
No. Her brother had just joined. It was actually my wife that, cause I talked to her about it. I was like, I think I should join the military. And she's like, no. I said, so I decided not to. Then her brother joined. He was in basic training. She went and saw him graduate and she's like, you know what? I think it would be good.
How old was her brother?
Her brother was 18.
Yeah.
He was not old I was.
Yeah, I'm like, he was a kid, wasn't he?
And he's still in, so, you know.
18 to 20 is your average.
Oh, he's still in.
Yeah,
huh?
so my brother-in-law is trying to do the full 20 years.
Yeah, wow, jeez.
And I wanted to. I was actually going to try to stay in. But
they forced you out.
They did.
So what did you do?
Like, your knees are messed up.
So what did you do in the military? So you were part of airborne unit, right?
I was. I decided to be all I could be, I guess. I was airborne infantry. And so when The 101st is not airborne anymore, even though they have the patch, which is funny. We make fun of them. Because I was in the 82nd.
Gotcha.
So I was at, it's now called Fort Liberty. I was stationed there, but it was Fort Bragg. I was stationed there for the full 5 years. Because when you're airborne infantry, that's pretty much where you go. There's only two more units that, active duty. There's one in Italy, the 173rd, and then 25th ID has a brigade in Alaska.
That's
awesome.
That's for Russia and North Korea mostly, maybe China.
Yeah,
I got stories about Fort Bragg.
It's for when it. There you go. It's for when it freezes over and they can walk across.
Vietnam is as it's referred to as the city just outside.
So Fort Bragg. So this goes back to my days of working in the medical record space. So I had a buddy that worked for a company called MISIS, which was an electronic medical record. This is in the early days of electronic medical records. When everyone was still charting on paper. And, he said, okay, down in by Fort Bragg in North Carolina, the MISIS focused heavily on gynecologist office. And he said, he talked to so many gynecologists and they all basically said the same thing. We always know when there's a deployment because all the wives come and get on birth control. And all I could think was like, that is the most fucked up thing to hear. That as soon as the military is going to go on deployment, all their wives go on birth control. Like, that's insane to me.
I am not surprised by
that.
But
no, I mean, it makes sense, but it's also.
It always happens.
Again, there's a reason military people don't stay together. And like, people are like, oh, we're going to get married because I'm going to go off to the war and die. Like, or I'm going to go be deployed and I want to make sure.
Well, I mean, I think the intent is that my spouse can follow me. But
well, and then there's also, then you can get my paycheck.
Yeah.
Because if you have a spouse, they get your they get a share of your money. I mean, I don't know.
What it is right now, or at least when I was in, because it has changed a little bit. There's like $500,000 in insurance, and so if you do die, that's pretty much what your spouse gets. Is that
so? And you did go overseas, right?
Because I deployed twice.
You're in the military during. I mean, we just got out of basically 20-year long war.
Yep. And I served in both places. I served in Iraq and Afghanistan.
Yeah, so my dad was in Iraq the first time.
Went to the now they're basically calling it the same thing. It's like the second Gulf War.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, and so. It's funny listening to my dad. It's like we could have finished it, but it was so political it wouldn't let us. And I remember him home and saying, "We'll be back."
No, we finished it. Oh, man. Yeah. I saw Bush on the aircraft carrier in the second war. It's mission accomplished, right behind his damn ass on the aircraft carrier.
Yeah, that's what they do.
So you served over there. I assume, I mean, Afghanistan was not probably a fun place.
No.
And being in an airborne unit, I'm assuming that you probably saw some combat.
I did. I saw a little bit.
That's a tough thing,
it's
I think, for anyone.
It's a thing to live through.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's tough. So in the airborne, what were the things that you specialized in?
Infantry.
Boots on the ground.
No one had to shoot people in the face.
What kind of guns did you use? Because not everyone in the infantry carries the same loadout, right? Like
no. So usually you divide into certain teams. So they have machine guns per squad, and those are usually the smaller calibers, usually 5.56 or 223 Remington. And then you'll have a large machine gun, which isn't really that large. It's just a heavier machine gun, which is 308 or 7.62 by 51. And that's going to be, they used to have the M60 in Vietnam, we switched over to a 249 is what we were using when I was in. And then you'll have vehicle mounted weapons, and that's usually an M2, which is a 50 caliber, still the Browning.
Those are the most standard for most vehicles, aren't they? The 50 cal.
Yeah, but when I was in Iraq, we switched over to the 240, right? So we were using, a 240, which is the 308, the 7.62. So, which is kind of funny. We were trying to, it was when we were trying to get out of Iraq, and so we were trying to, lower the
destruction.
I guess
there's a big difference.
We really did not engage in too much when I was in Iraq. So,
yeah, I mean, Iraq in general, I think, especially towards the end, we were doing a lot more training of Iraqi forces and doing a lot less fighting.
We were there as a peacekeeper.
I mean, we were. Yeah.
Well, when you overthrow, it's such a weird thing. When you militarily overthrow a government, you have a responsibility to try and like make sure there's some stability before you leave the place.
But so that's a point of contention for me. The worst part is I think we should have kept a force that was larger, so we kind of could have done the same thing.
We probably would have had less problems with Syria if we would have.
I think that's what we should have done. I know it's harder. Because we would have been spending so much money. It's kind of what we did in Korea, Japan, and Germany, you know. And a lot of that, you know, the good things that happened in Korea and Japan.
Yeah, to be fair, Japan and Germany, everyone stayed.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, we were the only ones there in Japan because of, you know, what happened. But, like, no, that was we don't want this shit to happen again, so we're putting permanent military installations in here, and you can't make your own. You just got to fucking deal with us being here. We learned a lesson from World War One with Germany.
I know.
I mean, that's exactly because, like, World War One, Germany, you know, pisses off the world, and everyone pushes them back in their place, and they make it so they can't have a military. They oppress the population in a sense, but we don't stay there. And so that leads to the rise of fascism and Hitler and eventually World War II. And the lessons learned from World War One were, okay, we need to stay there so this doesn't happen again. Yeah. And so basically, I mean, that's why you saw Germany get split into two, essentially, and all of Western Europe was on the west side of Germany. Yeah. And then you had, you know, Russia kind of control the eastern side and the eastern bloc there. And then, of course, we got to just stay in Japan after we fucked them up pretty hard.
Well, we did. Yeah.
So were you able to go to Japan or Germany?
I just was at the airport in Germany. Just when I was flying over to
my dad was stationed there
Afghanistan
for about a year, so he did time.
Oh, I got you.
Most guys, if you're in it, you'll be stationed at one of those places at least once during your time. So my dad did time in Germany. He really liked it. He said it was
Time in Germany.
Did time.
I've hardly talked to anyone that has been stationed in Germany for whatever branch they're there for that didn't enjoy it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Honestly. And same thing with Japan. Yeah. Most people that get stationed in Japan like it quite a bit too.
Jeremy, he was Marines. He was stationed in Japan for a while.
Yeah.
Yeah. So is that how you fell in love with guns? Is the military?
It is, honestly. Before then, I was not a gun person. I kind of shot guns. My dad hunted, you know, so I I didn't even really shoot hunting rifles that much. It was like 22 was pretty much the extent of it when I was a kid. And then once I was infantry, I worked with so many different weapon systems that I was like, oh, yeah, this is
awesome. You were in a real branch of the military, not the Air Force.
I mean, I jumped out of their airplanes.
Every single time we have someone from the Air Force, I ask them if they train in any kind of firearms because they don't make them all. Like, Air Force is the only branch where everyone's not at least trained in a basic firearm.
That's why they
call
it.
Which is weird.
Yeah. Chair Force. Yeah.
Well, Space Force probably doesn't train them either.
No, because they're basically split from
An auxiliary of the Air Force. They're not like the cool one. Like, the Marines are an auxiliary of the Navy, and like they're a cool branch of the Navy.
Both Navy and Marines are badass because they got the CVs.
Well, the Navy also is kind of like that, too. They're kind of like the Air Force.
There's a lot of high-tech stuff.
They do. And so a lot of their jobs are just maintaining the ships.
True.
So,
I mean, think about it. An aircraft carrier's got like 5,000 fucking people on it.
Yep. Those are crazy.
But they do have the CBs.
Yeah, the CBs. Cool. I mean, they have the SEALs, which, you know, that's their special ops. The special ops in any of the branches, they're pretty amazing. Even
the snake eaters in the Air Force.
They have some amazing special ops in the Air Force.
It is funny, though. Like, I was in Civil Air Patrol when I was a kid, and these people are like, oh, the Air Force Special Forces are the best. I'm like, are you fucking kidding me? I don't care who you are.
They're pretty good.
The SEALs are the preliminary.
I mean, that's what people say, but
they're also usually the ones that are actually acting in a lot of the, like, subversive stuff that you don't even hear about.
I would say it depends on what you're trying to do. So as far as, like, if you want specialized infantry units, you're going to want to go with the Army Rangers, right?
So my dad was in the Night Stalkers.
I got you.
If you know, you know.
Yeah.
Well, and like when you set up like a guy I worked with, you know, he was in the military, in the army, and they did a lot of like, you know, forward training outposts in like Haiti and a bunch of the Central American countries, and we were fucking with all their governments over the last 40 years.
Oh, yeah.
So, you know, and a lot of that is covert ops stuff. He was a Ranger.
Yeah.
And it is, you know, it's not the Navy running those things. It's, you know, Rangers. No.
The Army does a lot more. They're the largest branch of the military, right? Yeah. So the Army has more aircraft than the Air Force.
Oh, yeah. They got to move
if
more
it's
people.
If it's helicopters... It's the Army.
Well, except for over here. This is the National Guard.
Well, I mean, it's Army National Guard.
It is Army National. And they're flying Apaches.
Yep.
I love them. Yep. I love watching those Apaches. So
cool. I actually was able to jump out of helicopters.
Oh, nice.
And I've even jumped out of an Army airplane, which is kind of funny.
Out of what kind of helicopters? Mostly Blackhawks?
So I jumped Blackhawk.
Yeah.
Is what I jumped out of. But people have jumped Chinook.
Yeah,
that happens all the time.
They never jump out of Hueys, did they?
They mostly did air assault. Okay, so they did a lot of that. And so that's when the 101st transitioned to an air assault unit
was after Vietnam.
Yeah. Yeah, it was after Vietnam.
That makes sense. Cause there was a lot of that in Vietnam, especially with Hueys and gun mounts on them.
Yeah. So that's basically what I did when I was in Afghanistan is we ran like air assault missions where we would go, we'd take off in the helicopter and then, you know, we'd land, do security, do our mission.
That's crazy stuff.
Trying to catch Taliban.
So when did you finish military? When did they push you out?
So I got off active duty in 2014, and then I was – I mean, I was honorably discharged from both, but it was in 2017.
Okay, so not that long ago.
No. They're like, you need to go get your medical exam done. So when I went and got my medical exam, they're like, oh, you got arthritis in both your knees. And
you're too fucking old. That's what happens when you start at 29 instead of 18.
That's probably true.
Those 11 years make a big difference.
You didn't get a chance to get high enough that you could just sit behind a desk.
Just think about it. Like, think about as you're a human, think about your body at 20, at 30, and at 40. And like, I'm just like 2 years younger than you. And like, 40 is, when you hit 40, you start to feel everything.
Oh, yeah.
And like, you sometimes have arthritis, and especially if you're fucking jumping out of aircraft on a regular basis, you're going to fuck your knees up. They're going to get messed up.
So that's actually a thing for everyone.
Yeah.
Even I had buddies that got in when they were 18. They were getting out 5 years later, so they were like, you know, 23, and they already were messed. Their backs were messed up. My back's messed up.
So our good friend Sean – was Marines, and he broke both of his legs doing a jump.
That stuff happens.
He'd only been in like a year.
Yeah, he broke them pretty early. But that stuff happens.
Roy was in?
I don't. He was in Vietnam.
My mom's husband.
He was probably in the Army.
Not a fan of.
Yeah.
He was drafted to Vietnam. He was probably in the Army.
So probably Army.
In Vietnam, he was jumping from an aircraft, and I don't know what kind.
What the hell?
And he actually took, I don't know.
The
but
cats.
He took.
Hold on, just a sec.
Okay. Hello. Yep,
yeah,
I'm back.
Right.
Okay.
Better.
So I don't know what branch, and I don't know what he was doing. I don't know what he was jumping from, but he was jumping from an aircraft and took fire across his legs.
Yeah.
So he still has them, but they're practically useless.
Most likely, if you were drafted in Vietnam, you're in the Army.
Oh, yeah.
Probably. It's because it's the biggest
I don't
branch,
know if he was drafted or not.
Well, I mean, the Air Force was still pretty young in Vietnam.
So the Air Force was, they split off from the Army.
Yeah, and they started
the Army
like,
Air Corps.
Yeah,
World War II, it was the Army Air Corps. So like Vietnam, I think, was the first major conflict where the Air Force existed as its own group.
Yes.
And again, very specific missions and stuff. So not, the Army was really running the show there. Yeah. So you get out of the military finally. Were you here in Utah when that happened, or did you move back?
I was in Texas.
Okay.
So I moved back to Texas. I started doing the IT thing again.
What part of Texas were you in?
Dallas area. So I actually lived in Collin County, which is where Plano is.
Yeah, yeah. A lot of tech in Plano, actually.
There is, yeah. So that's why it's one of the most techy places.
It's where Texas Instruments is headquartered, actually.
Yep.
So then how do you convince your wife to move to Utah?
well, I actually,
Has she been here? Had she been here before?
She had. Okay. She has lived here a little bit, but she only claims Texas.
Yeah, I was going to say, because like you met her in Texas. I assume she's a Texan, and that's that's a weird transition unless she is LDS.
Yeah.
Is she LDS?
She is.
Okay,
yes.
So then that's not as weird of a transition.
It's not, but
a hard thing to like.
She did not want to move back ever.
Yeah, I still love Texas. I was born there.
He was born in Lubbock.
If I didn't live in Utah, that's I'd probably want to
still be in Texas. Family in Texas, so that's probably where I'll retire.
My grandfather was born in El Paso.
Yeah.
Oh, I gotcha.
Family in Fort Worth, Houston, and then Buffalo, which is Centerville, Madisonville, about an hour outside of Waco.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
Nowhere. So, that whole stretch.
Most of Texas, people think of Texas and they think of these big cities like Dallas, Houston, Austin, and there are a bunch of big cities, but Texas is massive. And there's a ton of Texas that's
tiny, tiny.
Very uninhabited and sparse. Yep. It's like Wyoming.
My grandfather was born in Marfa, Texas. I don't know if you've heard of Marfa.
I have. Texas is huge.
It's a border. It's a border town.
Yeah, a border town.
Oh, I gotcha.
Yeah. It's in the middle of the desert, and it's the first town for a long time.
So it's actually
50 miles away.
His house has been designated as a historical site, and people stash water and stuff for people crossing the border. And I think my grandpa would be proud, but I don't know. But yeah,
it's like a two-room shack.
It was a room where you had a kitchen and a bedroom, and you brought your stock in at night to keep you and them warm. And there were 12 kids in his family.
And that little tiny place. Yeah, it's crazy.
So I want to get back. How'd you convince your wife to move to Utah?
It wasn't
that
hard.
Why did you decide to move?
Okay, so that's another story. So Spencer and I worked at the same company. But I transitioned to this weird team where the manager was in New York. And so it was weird. It was weird. Anyway, they were trying to lay everybody off. Our team was small. It was only like 5 people, and they were trying to get rid of as many people as they could, you know. So it was after Dell purchased the company, because I worked for a company called EMC.
Okay, I know EMC,
And then Dell purchased EMC, so then they're like, no, it's Dell EMC, so that's how you had to say it. And after that, you know, they're trying to save money, and so I was laid off. I was like, I don't know what to do. I couldn't find a job. It was around Christmas time.
It was
pretty rough.
It's like impossible to find jobs that time of year too.
Yeah.
Any company that lays people off at the end of the year, just assholes. Because like no one hires in December.
Yeah.
And like companies are like, oh, it's happy Thanksgiving. You have no more job. And you're like, what the fuck? Right before Christmas? Like,
you got kids.
I was lucky enough. It was right after Thanksgiving.
Yeah.
It was right at the beginning of the month. It was great. So I, got laid off. I looked for a job. The only place I could find was pizza delivery. So I did that for a while. My wife had, we'd separated at that point. It was after. So sold my house in January, and then I was like, I moved back in with my parents. I was 39 still. So.
Yeah.
It was pretty rough.
That's a tough decision.
It's a rough time.
Yeah, kids.
Part in life.
I do. I have quite a few. We had 2 sets of twins.
Oh, wow.
6 kids.
So did they stay? Did you split up the kids?
No.
They each took a twin from each set.
So I did
they
actually.
Have a set?
My oldest twin, my oldest son, decided he was going to stay with me, which I was not in the best mindset at the time. So it probably wasn't the best decision for him, but. I don't know.
That's tough.
Makes me he's actually in the Army right now, which is crazy. Trying to be, you know, I guess he looked up to me when I was in the military, so.
The military is a great place for people to go. There's a lot that you can accomplish there and do there.
There's more than you think. If you want to be a doctor.
It's a good way
or
to
do dentist,
it. If you want to be a pilot.
It's probably the best way. Yeah, if you want to be a pilot.
Did you ever
join
know Corey Mahoney in high school?
If you want to be a pilot, like getting your pilot's license and flying privately is not the way to get a job with an airline.
No,
it's flying for the military.
So one of the friends we went to high school with, he wanted to be a surgeon, but his parents were poor. They couldn't put him through college. So that's what he did. He went through the military to become a doctor, and that's how he did it.
And they'll pay for the whole thing.
Yep.
So what I thought was crazy is the military, at least when I was in, still had a school specifically for PAs. And so if you wanted to be a PA, you could actually transition, you know, after being enlisted to be a PA.
I mean, that's basically what my uncle did in the Navy. He was a physical therapist during the first Gulf War. And he worked on a hostage rescue ship out in the Gulf. And, you know, that's what he's done for his whole career. Once he finally left the Navy, is he was a physical therapist.
I gotcha.
But that's a, it is a really good way for people to, and especially like when you're doing one of those higher end skills, and I say higher end just meaning there's a lot more training involved. So like doctor, dentist, you know, when I enlisted, I was in the nuclear program with the Navy.
Yep.
Like those high end skills, not only do you learn all that stuff for, I don't want to say free because you have to put a lot of fucking time.
You do.
So like you go to like one of those advanced schools for every year you're in training, you have to match that on the back. And so like, there's a whole, like I calculated I'd been 16 years in the military. If I would have stayed in ROTC, it would have been 16 years before I could get out. And at that point, it's like, well, I got 4 more years and then I can retire. Yeah. Like, but when you leave the military, you've made all these civilian contacts as well, because you work closely with companies like Raytheon and Boeing and all these other defense contractors, and you get out and you have a job in the private sector just waiting for you.
You do.
And it's a, you know, it's a really good way to have a long career in a field that you want to be in.
Yep.
If you're able to do it.
That's true. Like, if you're able to do it. That's why I said the probably the best way to become a doctor, like if you don't have or if your parents don't have money to pay for school, the military will pay for it.
It's
the whole thing.
8 to 12 years of school to become a doctor, depending on what you want to do.
Yep.
Military is going to put you through all of that.
Yep. Yeah. And then you have to stay in for a certain period of time. It's usually based on how much schooling you're paid for.
You're also, by the way, if you go to school for stuff like that and you end up with degrees, you're an officer. You're not enlisted.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. No, he.
Oh, yeah. And you get paid. It's
all,
so much
all,
more.
All the doctors are officers.
Yeah. He went in ROTC, started out as a second lieutenant. I mean, he didn't, he didn't start out at the bottom.
No. So if you actually get your, if you become a doctor, you start out as a captain. You don't even go to the lieutenant stage. So you're getting paid basically the same as what a civilian would. Mm-hmm. You're getting all this experience that they don't get. And then you transition out and you,
that's just crazy, a career. And then you have, this entire like military retirement and pension and benefits on the backside.
If
of that.
If you stay there for 20 years, which not everybody does,
no,
and they don't have to because they can make so much money. They don't have the school debt that a lot of doctors have. So.
Well, the other thing is, like we talk about this a lot on the show. You know, one thing that I always tell like all of our friends' kids, I'm like, I don't know what I want to do. I'm like, well, if you're going to go to college, if you don't know what you want to do, take business.
Yep.
Because it doesn't matter what you do in life. If you have the skills to run and operate a business, you can turn whatever you want to do into money.
Yeah.
But if you, like, if you go to school, when I say this all the time, I work in the medical field, real close with doctors. I'm on the tech side of it.
Yeah.
But like, I know so many doctors, they go to school for 8, 10, 12 years to become very specialized, like some of the best hand surgeons in the world. They're the worst fucking business people. And they walk out of school with a ton of debt. They don't know how to operate a business, and they go into business for themselves. It's like the craziest fucking thing ever. When you're in the military, you get all those skills, but you also learn how, like, the military itself really teaches you how to run an organization, because it's a giant ass fucking organization. Yep. And so you learn those skills as well just by happenstance of being there. And then you don't learn that in college necessarily. No,
there's a lot of leadership skills.
Yeah. You know? Yeah. That's why like people that come out of the military, they get jobs in the civilian sector so easily, and they're able to create businesses because they understand like the discipline and hard work and the things that matter, as they do that.
Yeah.
So how did you get into, let's get to the, your actual.
Yeah, no, we haven't even got to your business.
Yeah, we haven't.
So how do we transition into that?
So once I decided, I talked to a couple of my buddies, and this was when I was still in. I was like, you know what? I want to build my own AR. And so I decided to do that. I built my own AR for the first time. It was in 2012, so lots of people were buying. It was like a buying frenzy. So I spent way more than I should have on that first rifle, but it was an amazing experience for me. You know, I went and got a Glock 23. I don't know if you know what that is, but it's a 40 caliber. Mm-hmm. 'Cause my buddies are like, oh, you gotta have that stopping power. And I was like, I don't know anything. Wow. So yeah, stopping power. So I have, you know, my mindset has changed quite a bit. Not quite a bit, but certain things, there's certain shortcuts that I kind of took that I refuse to take now. So I do gunsmithing. I'm kind of a part-time gunsmith, where I'll do accurizing of hunting rifles. I've done trigger jobs, you know, stuff like that. Just minor gunsmithing is what I do. But really, my passion is to be a custom AR builder.
And that's the heart of the business.
That's basically what it is. But I do try to be as, you know, diverse as possible when it comes to gunsmithing. So, I took some, you know, I'm doing certain trainings just to, you know, at trade school just to do that. So, I just finished machinist. So I'm an apprentice machinist. So.
Oh, wow. Yeah. So you really are like building custom stuff.
Yeah. That's what I like to do. So.
So, and I saw like on your website, you do NRA instruction as well.
So I am an NRA instructor for pistol and rifle, just basic courses.
Oh, okay.
And I can teach you basic, you know, fundamentals.
So now that you've started this business where you're doing a lot of custom weapon builds and some instruction stuff, is this a full-time gig for you or are you doing
right now
stuff?
It's still part-time. Okay. But I work with a lot of my friends at work or colleagues because, you know, whatever. I work with a lot of my friends and colleagues and, you know, build them rifles.
Is so what I've been doing. You've turned recently. A hobby into a business. Like
that's what
really
I've been doing.
Yep. Yeah. That's the best. And again, goes back to if you know how to run a business, you can do that. And you can turn things that you love into, you know, some kind of monetary compensation.
Yeah.
And the other thing I wanted to talk to you a lot about is silencers.
Okay.
Because you sell silencers. You can deal in silencers.
I do, yeah.
Silencers, a lot of people don't – I don't think a lot of people know this. Silencers are actually really hard to get in a lot of senses. Like
they are.
There's – you know, just about anyone, as long as you're not like literally defined as crazy from some, you know, time spent in mental institutions or have a criminal record, you can just go get a gun.
Yep.
Like – they run a background check on the spot. You know, you can get your, like, I got my gun at a gun show from a dealer. It took like 20 minutes.
Yeah.
Without my CCW. And they just run a background check. Yep. You haven't had any major issues. You're not crazy. Here's your gun. Silencers are a bit different though, right?
They are. It's what's called an NFA item, which stands for National Firearms Act. So you have to fill out paperwork that goes to the, ATF. Once that paperwork's filled out, they do an approval process, a background check, and then there's a specific waiting period, which, it changes, it fluctuates quite a bit. I've heard recently that it is pretty quick. So there have been some people that have had their NFA items approved in a very short period of time.
What other stuff are in the NFA?
So there's short-barreled rifles. And pre-1986 machine guns.
And that's it?
Basically.
Wow.
So short-barreled rifles, short-barreled shotguns, all of those specific things are controlled under the NFA.
What about grenade launchers?
I actually don't think they're controlled by the NFA, but the specific device, like an actual grenade, is controlled. It's super weird. You can get shock rounds, which those are kind of fun, I guess.
Yeah, so it's where
they're kind of boring, but you know,
because you think about it, like you see silencers in the movies all the time, but they're not easy to get a hold of necessarily.
And what they shows in movies is so different than what it actually does. All it really does is it lowers the decibel range a certain amount to sometimes make it hearing safe. It's not always hearing safe. They're really good for hunting, just so you know, because what it does is it changes how it reports, right? And the reason why it's able to change how the rifle reports, it means that the animals aren't going to get as spooked.
Yeah, they're not
going
to run as far or not as many are going to hear it.
That's right. And so that's really what it's about. That's why a lot of people have decided to start calling them suppressors, but silencers was the original.
Yeah, it doesn't really go pew, pew, pew.
No, not even close.
They're still loud.
Even with a .22, it can be loud, but those are probably the most quiet.
So I know Brighton, applied for his. It took 9 months.
Yeah.
And he's military. It still took him 9 months.
It really does not matter what your background was.
People got to remember, like, all of this stuff, like, when you're applying for these special, they're not computerized. There are laws against computerizing these systems in the country.
So there's a person that takes your application and looks at it, manually does it.
And puts it in a box or a file that then gets put into a box that gets put into long-term storage. Like, none of this stuff is computerized.
So they have, the ATF has actually started to do some computerized things. They have the ATF eForms website that anybody can go to. So you can do your Form 1, which is if you're building an NFA item, or a Form 4, which is where you're purchasing.
Do you build the silencers, or do you just acquire them?
Because I'm a manufacturer.
Okay.
But
I got to imagine they're difficult to machine.
It is. And there's certain things that you want to accomplish when you're doing it, right? Everything is a little different. And so some they build out of titanium just because it's lighter. But titanium has some downsides.
So I'm actually curious, and if you don't know, it's okay, but how do silencers actually work in terms of changing the actual report and everything?
Okay, so.
Because they basically are just an extension of the barrel.
So it actually is a little different. So what it is, it's some type of chamber, and then inside that chamber, you have multiple, they'll usually be baffles of some kind.
I was going to say baffles.
So what you're doing is you're creating a vortex inside those baffles to lower the sound report, and so you get a lot of weird gas things.
You get a lot more with the baffles, you get a lot more of the sound waves from the bullet leaving the chamber actually sticking in there.
So it's just to like slow how it transitions out of the end of the muzzle.
So instead of one big loud bang.
No, you still get a loud bang.
Mm-hmm. Do you?
It's just, it reports different than
I guess it's like soundproofing in like a theater or something with the baffles there. Is that?
I mean, that's kind of the idea, you know.
It's intentionally changing the sound a certain way by how you design it.
That's exactly right. And so there's quite a few different designs. There's really simple designs. Stainless steel is probably the best as far as like, longest lasting, right? And so stainless steel is usually what you use if you're using an automatic. Anyway, that matters.
Do suppressors improve accuracy of weapons at all?
No.
Because they do link to the barrel,
I feel like they make it worse, right?
Well, they can.
Yeah.
So it depends on how good your... It depends on the rifle or, you know, the gun, whatever you want to say. So depending on what it is, it changes the accuracy. It's always going to change it. So you have to change how you shoot when you have a suppressor on or a silencer.
So now I want to go back to your actual love, and I want to talk about some of the custom guns you've made over the years. Because I'm curious what's the craziest thing you've done from a custom standpoint?
Craziest thing? I actually try not to. Isn't that weird? The only thing I could say is I helped my brother build his first AR, and he wanted it painted red, which he calls the Red Rider. And that was my brother Spencer who was on. Right?
I think he mentioned that you helped him. I don't know that he told us that it was red, but I think he told us that you helped
him. He wanted it painted red. And so he calls it the Red Rider.
So did you just like powder coat everything red?
No, we spray painted it. This was when I was first starting. And I actually don't mind spray painting. Lots of guys like to do it. It wears, once it starts wearing out, it has a cool look to it. And so a lot of times spray paint is cool.
It's called patina.
There you go. The good old patina. Yeah. So, I started actually doing that in the military. So we had some items that were, ACU camo pattern, right? Okay. You know what that is? Yeah. It's the digital camo.
I was just going to say the digital one, the one that looks like
it was the worst camouflage pattern they ever had.
What is that? 8-bit?
Dumb. It was horrible. It was just the colors. If we had picked like real camouflage colors,
see the navy, the navy's digital stuff that they get, the blue and white crap.
That's horrible.
It's horrible.
It's so that, you know, if they're in the ocean, you can't find them.
Cause you know, like they're just like,
that's what they
chilling in there. Yeah. Like, what are you hiding? You're on a fucking black deck of a carrier. Like, of course you're going to see, you idiot.
It's, It's for the water. I know. It literally is. That's
so if you fall in the water, they're not going to be able to
they
find your ass.
They cannot see you.
It's so dumb, though.
Yeah. So the Army, it was – so how the digital camouflage patterns came about is the Canadian military wanted to have digital camouflage patterns because with the traditional camouflage patterns, when they were using night vision, they could see it, right? And so they're like, oh, okay, well, we should – come up with a camouflage pattern that
you can't see
it's digital.
That
you can't see it. And so they came up with their digital camouflage pattern and they picked a woodland, which is similar to our original woodland, but it was just digital, and then a desert camouflage pattern. And then the Marines really liked it. They created their own and they put the EGA, the Eagle Globe and Anchor, right? So they patented it and then they sold it to make money because the Marines they're funded through the Navy, right? And so they were trying to make additional funds. And so they sold it back to the Navy. And but the Navy had to take out the EGA.
That's insane.
Which is funny.
That's funny.
Yeah. It's hard to see, but I had buddies that were in the Marines, and so they would show me. It's pretty cool.
That is cool. So what's your favorite custom thing you've ever done?
Oh, man. I don't even know. Probably my rifle. I have my own custom rifle.
Not the first one that you made, right?
It is not.
Okay.
It is not. I actually kind of sold most because I kind of sold everything in parts, which is, you know, weird, I guess. But the first rifle that I ever built, I sold most of it. But the rifle I have now is probably – it was built specifically for home defense or whatever. I think that's probably the best. I went and did some training with Fieldcraft Survival in Provo.
So what What's like the price range to do a custom like AR for someone, like a custom AR-15?
I price it out, so I do parts and try to get it as low as possible. I try to build
because they're not cheap to begin with. They're
well, it depends on what you're trying to go for. You know, you can build some cheap ARs, which you know they might be all right. They might. It's usually the quality control that you're paying for when it comes to you know, guns, right? Any type of gun. The higher the price, it's usually because there's more custom work on it. So I try to do the widest price range, and I try to at least start out mil-spec. So that's where I start, where I didn't used to do it, but now I do. I want mil-spec rifle, which means it's a chrome-lined barrel. You're going to have a chrome-lined bolt carrier group, right?
Mm-hmm.
And that's what I start out at. I start out at mil-spec, and then it has to meet certain criteria based on, you know, mil specifications. That's what it stands for, military specifications for an M16, AR-15, you know. There's certain things that are different, which nobody really talks about. There are – you cannot – unless you can machine it – and make it, you cannot change a civilian AR-15 into an M16, just so you know. There are certain things that they do change about the civilian versions.
Probably intelligently so, I would assume. Yeah. I mean, I don't know.
I mean, I don't know that I want somebody that doesn't have very good training to just be running out there with that.
And you can just buy an AR-15. You can go buy a Tech-9 or an Uzi. They're not restricted. You can just go buy them.
Well, the thing that I always stress... And I'm kind of a 2A purist, right? But I think training should be more and more easily accessible.
Oh, yeah.
Because I think that's
sure.
the most important thing.
I personally
is being trained and understanding it's a tool for a specific purpose.
Mm-hmm.
And so you need to be as safe as possible. And that's how I
have long said that we have to have a license to drive a vehicle. There's nothing that's in the Constitution. I'm a staunch advocate of gun rights.
Yeah.
There's nothing in the Constitution that prohibits us from saying, if you want to carry a gun, you need to be licensed and you need to be insured.
Yeah.
And I think that requiring someone to take a test to indicate they actually know how to safely handle and operate a gun and to be insured, we require that for freaking car ownership. Every state in the union requires you to have insurance to drive your car and to have a license in that state that basically the same thing. It proves that you understand the rules of the road and have a grasp on how to properly and safely operate that vehicle or motorcycle or whatever it is. There's no reason we can't do that with guns.
When we did our concealed carry, some of the things that happened when we went to the, because we didn't actually shoot on the range.
No, it's not required here to
shoot.
But
we went.
Which I don't know if I necessarily agree with that.
I don't agree with it, but we didn't. But the people that did, we went back there and we were watching, and I'm just watching. I'm like,
I'm really happy that they have someone showing them how to shoot a gun.
I'm like, I don't want to be in this room with them by myself. This is terrifying.
I've had my concealed for about 15 plus years.
I got you.
We did all the shooting. I don't know if it was just the instructor we had.
So it probably was. So I always recommend it. I'm actually a CFP instructor, and I always recommend training. The first time I got my concealed was in Texas, and in Texas, it's a requirement to shoot. And I totally agree with that. Like I said, the more training you can get, the more safe you are with your firearm handling, the better you are.
Yeah.
I was just talking to one of my buddies today, and he's like, man, there was a time when high schools had gun clubs.
I
you know, like trap shooting clubs.
Oh, we did. Well, they still do.
There are still some high schools.
Yeah, Riverton has one. Our friend's kid is in the shooting club.
Nice. Yeah, and he's good.
He's a good shot.
Actually lettered.
He's a hell of a lot better shooter than I am.
That's how you do it, is you start young. Usually it's the younger you start, you know,
you can be. I grew up in small town Wyoming. I remember having to take hunter safety courses in school because guns were just prevalent around the community. Everyone hunted. Like, fall break falls during the start of hunting season for a reason in this part of the world. Like, because everyone goes out and shoots guns and kills things and eats them throughout the rest of the winter.
So, I don't know, a decade or so ago, I worked with this girl who was from a hunting family.
Yeah.
And she had actually hunted cougar. And they applied for the big permits and everything. And I can't remember how this discussion started out, but we were talking about guns and stuff. And she made a flippant comment. And I said, yeah, but you've got to remember, we grew up in two different households. Like, I'm completely different now. Like, I know my gun safety. But if kids who grow up in the suburbs go to your house and see a weapon, I guarantee you they're not going to have the same respect as you who has grown up with it and who has actually killed something with it and know the power behind the weapon.
And whose parents have probably had the conversation of, This isn't a toy.
Yeah. You don't touch it. You don't play with it.
Nope.
Or if you have to handle it, this is how you check to make sure that it's safe. And and it was very eye-opening to her, because I think that that's the trouble that we have right now, is people who aren't around guns just inherently think we just shouldn't have them. They're just always dangerous. Yeah. And people who grow up around them and know them know they can be around and they can be just as safe as the stove or knives in your kitchen.
That's right.
The prime example.
I totally agree with them.
Our buddy Sean was over here last week. I game on Thursdays. And he comes over and he was like, hey,
Oh, I've got a new toy.
And he had just gotten a brand new Hellcat for his concealed
oh, yeah,
weapon.
I gotcha.
And he pulls it out and we were looking at it and
I was like, oh, that looks about the size of my Glock. I want to see. Yeah. And so I went upstairs, got my locked Glock. Like, it's not loaded. It's got the whole thing through it and everything to compare.
And neither of the guns are loaded at this point.
No.
And Bree's handling the gun safely and talking to Sean. And our friend Josh,
I had it down like this.
Yeah. I mean, it's being held in a safe position. Our friend Josh, who is not a gun person and who has not been gone through any of this stuff.
He's not against him. He's gone shooting with us. But
he was terrified. He's like, oh, be really careful with that. And we know what we're doing. We're handling them safely. But it is that same thing where, he just doesn't have that experience. He doesn't have any of the training or the experience of handling weapons very often. So, I'm a staunch proponent of, I think that you should actually have to be licensed and insured to carry a firearm. I don't think that's unconstitutional personally. I don't think the Constitution specifies that. In fact, it specifies well-armed militias, which I think most citizens are not part of a militia. So,
I said, I am a 2A purist. So, the wording is, for the security of a free state, a well-armed militia,
I'm in the camp of, One, I think, well-armed does not mean handguns. Basically, the idea is you have to be able to keep your rulers, your government in check. And the government has the most advanced military in the world.
They can just send a drone to get you. You probably shouldn't just have a handgun.
I
agree with you on that too.
You're throwing sticks at someone who's shooting a gun at you, basically, like the types of weapons that the military has access to. But that being said, like, if push comes to shove and there does have to be some semblance where the government is overthrown by the people for some reason, like, you want the people to be able to have access to that.
You do. And I totally agree with you on that one. I mean, that's the thing. That's what it's set up for. I think a lot of times it's surprising what you would be able to accomplish against an advanced military.
Oh, yeah.
Just the weapon systems that were technically allowed to have.
Yeah.
I did air quotes.
It's real easy to make.
You could hear it in your voice.
It's real easy to make things like bombs and other stuff. It's not difficult.
And so I think, I don't know, the best case scenario for me is that we don't have to do any of those things.
Right.
You know?
Yeah.
And that's based on my own personal experience, right? But I feel like being as prepared as possible, as trained as possible, is what we should all strive for.
Well, just like right? for any aspect of your life. Like, you want to be ready for the worst thing.
Yep.
And then if the best thing happens, great.
That's what we all want to hope for, right?
I think if we taught gun safety in school.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Just as a regular course, just like
when you take driver's ed.
Sex ed, driver's ed. If we taught gun safety in public school, we would have a whole different, landscape in terms of, we probably wouldn't have near as many kids shooting each other in their houses.
I agree.
We probably wouldn't have jackasses. Like, what just happened, a week or two ago, where a dude was screwing around with his friend and ended up shooting him and killing him.
Yep.
And now he's facing, involuntary manslaughter, assault with a deadly weapon charges. Like, that stuff doesn't happen if everyone is educated to an appropriate level. And as kids absorb that stuff, it sticks with them. Shooting something, not just someone,
like,
but that's a powerful thing to understand that, how dangerous some of those things are if they're not handled properly, how to clear jams.
Yeah.
Oh yeah. I thought that was the coolest part of concealed carry learning all of the different ways that, cause I'm still not comfortable doing that. Like, if my gun jams, I will almost 100% of the time set it down and make him come clear it just because I am not comfortable with it yet.
Yeah.
Well, and I would rather have him do it than me fumble with it.
And if you don't do it right, you can fucking shoot yourself.
You can
explode around in the chamber, and it can blast you from sticking up in the chamber. It can ignite.
Stove pipe, whatever.
So usually that's when it's fired and it catches.
Catches on the chamber. Yeah. But
like, learning all of that was really interesting. And now I know that, but still, like, I'm just not prepared to do that.
I totally understand. That's
like,
what,
I know it's a dangerous weapon. So I'll be like, no. So I set it down and I walk away and he comes up and fixes it. And
do you teach a lot of CCW classes or?
I have not really. I'm actually trying to set one up right now with some of the friends I have at work, and they are. it's so weird because we're like, oh, we're trying to schedule this. So.
Yeah,
I haven't done a ton.
So how do people get a hold of you if they want to do something custom or?
So they can go to my website. It has my phone number, or my email. Email is probably going to be a little bit better. They can call. I'll probably won't answer and leave a voicemail.
Oh, it's 2024. Everyone does the same thing.
So my website is tacticaltimmies.net. Pretty simple.
Awesome.
Yeah.
This is cool. It's been cool.
All right. We're going to do our weekly affirmation, then we'll let you get out of here.
All right.
You have to sit through this, though.
Okay.
Most of the time, they end up being pertinent. You saw I just
it
pulled
might not
a random
be to
one
you,
out of the box.
But it might be to somebody else in this room.
So,
it's really weird.
You can't save your face and your ass at the same time. This one's pretty short. So is there a secret you're keeping? Is ego keeping you from being honest about who you really are? Go ahead and admit where you fucked up. Seriously, we're all fuck ups in some way. Welcome to being human. You do you, baby.
There you go.
There you go.
I like that one. It's pretty short, too. Last week's was like a novel on the front and the back. We're running out of these things. I'm going to be so sad when they're gone. I really like them.
We should see if we can find you another box.
Thanks so much for being on the show with us. If you like what you hear, if you want to be involved in our community, you can join our Patreon, patreon.com/TNUP. You can name some of Jeremy's new chickens or the old chickens. Yeah. I would name the new ones, though.
They'll live longer.
Maybe name the Goliaths when he gets those after they've been alive for a few weeks. Because the older ones, you know, you're only going to get a couple years out of their name, but the new ones, you'll get more.
Don't waste your clever name on a dying chicken.
Exactly. I mean, if you really want one, you know, if you want to rename Birth Defect Bertha, you can.
Yep.
But I think that name's pretty good. So follow us out on social media at TNU Podcast and go to our website, thenewutah.com. Have a good week. It's April already, somehow magically. Oh, yeah. Easter's on 420 next year.